Richard Steenen is here, and a number of issues to hit on in the cyber realm since the last time we spoke, Richard. One of them is the embedment. That's not a word, but the embedding of cybersecurity in the threat landscape and in the threat perception of the national security operation of the United States. We see it, discussions of it on almost every occasion that anybody talks about the threat landscape in the Department of Defense. The Homeland Security Department is the leader, obviously, on the civilian side. But this is a concept that you and I were talking about 5 years ago. And so my first question for you is, if that's where the threat community was 5 years ago, we're coming around to that now in the federal space. Where are you and your colleagues today that we should be paying attention to, hopefully not 5 years from now?
Yeah, it's fun, actually. It feels a little bit like being transported from the future whenever I come inside the Beltway. So here we are, you know, 5 years on, 10 years on, actually, since we really started to see the rise of cybercrime. And in every single organization, almost down to the every single individual, has to experience a cyber attack in order to really feel it and feel that they need to protect everything. And we are getting at least people talking about it in fairly knowledgeable terms that, you know, the threat is everywhere, the threat is great, et cetera. And, you know, we know DOD recognized, according to William Lynn, when Buckshot Yankee, the agent.btz worm, spread throughout the Defense Department, that was their wake-up moment, even though there were many attacks before that that were very damaging, the Pentagon's email servers being totally owned, as we say. And all of those attacks raise the awareness, but whether or not there can be the amount of spending done that's going to be required, the hardening, just the controls put in place to avoid these attacks in the future is still very much in doubt. And yes, if the future plays out 5 years from now, we'll be talking about something called software assurance, which is writing software applications in such a way that they are not susceptible to these attacks, that they don't have the bugs in them that Microsoft, you know, continues to have, but had a serious problem with exactly 10 years ago. And they took a year off from development to train everybody in secure code development. And that, you know, that was an amazing shift for Microsoft. And it took them about 10 years after that to get to Windows 8, which is finally a pretty good, pretty secure operating system. Imagine if all federal systems had to go back and look at the millions of applications that have been written in C and C++ and Ada and BASIC, whatever, if you had to go back and review all those for vulnerabilities that attackers are going to look for. And the attacker is going to find them and use those to really turn these systems against us.
The most striking development, I think, since the last time you and I spoke, and it's been a couple of years, is the consent by chief information security officers and CIOs. The threat is everywhere. We're going to be attacked, and we need to be defensive and proactive about our reaction to that. That's a dramatic difference, because it's not that long ago that the major mode of operation, not just in the federal government but in the private sector, was, well, we're gonna stop attacks and we're gonna try to defend ourselves in such a way that nobody will be able to penetrate our networks. It's maybe not as desirable to say, yes, we're gonna get hit, but it certainly seems like it makes a lot more sense.
Well, the thing that troubles me about CISOs, especially inside federal government, is they actually haven't been given the complete responsibility and power to do their job. So when we see them talking about the threats and warning, what they're doing is CYA, right? They have no other option. All they can do is be able to say, I told you so. I asked for funds. I asked for a certain technology. It hadn't gone through the federal procurement process yet, so it's not even available to CIOs inside the federal government. So they don't have any options other than raising the flag and crying wolf.
The software assurance concept that you talked about, with all due respect, is not new and not brilliant, but it's something that Mark Forman talked about when he was the eGov administrator a long time ago, not making cybersecurity a bolt-on, something that you add on after the fact. It's integrated into the development process. One of the things that I'm hearing more about is a desire by agencies to try to buy either off the shelf or as close to off the shelf as possible. Is that a potential gain in the software assurance realm, or is that a potential detriment because of whatever the private sector is doing in the area of software assurance?
Well, certainly if, you know, you bought off the shelf database software from Oracle, you'd be probably 2 years ahead of the game, because they only fairly recently started taking software assurance seriously as well. But I worry most about systems. So here we have the Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35, entering full operational capability in, what, a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It has 9 million lines of code on board the system and 15 million lines of code for the logistics systems that they're building to go along with this big, I mean, the biggest platform the U.S. has ever built. And I have a very bad feeling that they haven't done any software assurance at all on those 9 million lines of code. They depend on weapon systems and platforms on the separation. But all of these platforms are becoming much better at communication, and there's a lot more ways that they're taking data in, and all data transport is a way to attack a system. And the U.S. has demonstrated that in several arenas where they can attack radar systems. These jet fighters are huge radar platforms and ISR and all sorts of communications, all of which could be somehow compromised in an attack.
Is software assurance a mature concept, or is it a work in progress?
It's a mature concept, for sure. So there's several, frameworks, BSIM being one of them, which is just a standard for secure software development practice. And you can do a maturity model against it and compare your practices. And there are tools that are quite mature that allow you to analyze the software. So you can either grab the source code while you're developing it. It's a little bit like a spell checker. It tells you when you're making mistakes. Or you can analyze the code after it's assembled and delivered as an app, and you can analyze and look for vulnerabilities in it.
Richard Steenan writes at the Security Current site at securitycurrent.com. We have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The software assurance model is just one thing that agencies should be on the lookout for then. We're seeing a maturation, at least in the pursuit of continuous diagnostics and mitigation in the federal government. Are they headed in the right direction in your view? Is this a pursuit of the right objectives, the right outcomes, or is this just a shift from FISMA and trying to get out of the checking boxes business?
Yeah, unfortunately, all of the shift that I'm seeing is towards a risk management methodology. And I'm not a big proponent of risk management when applied to IT security risks, IT security threats. Risk management works fairly well in life insurance, calculations, but it doesn't work well when there's threat actors that are humans that are trying to get around all of your protections. So mm-hmm. You can't systematize it as much. It really has to take a more of a military background or approach where you think that the attacker is trying to skirt your defenses. And they'll take the path of least resistance. They'll use foreign agents, internal agents, insiders.
One of the things that contractors have been talking about is how this threat landscape has trickled down. And the CDM concept is fine for the government to be to use as a concept. But, for example, the prime contractor is being hit, so they harden their defenses, and so the threat actor goes after the sub, and then the sub to the sub, and this is getting down. They're doing a good enough job at getting down to finding a vulnerability, as you just talked about. And some of the smaller companies in particular just can't afford much of a defense mechanism at all. Should we expect to see more of that as the government goes to CDM and their defenses are hardened more?
Absolutely. You're going to see the smallest contractor. It might not even be one in the direct chain, but look at Target retail stores where it was a HVAC contractor's capabilities that were used to break into Target.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at how many suppliers there are to any federal agency, all the way down to, the cleaning staff, who aren't ever going to have these types of security controls in place. So that the perimeters have to be tightened, you know, at the defensible boundaries that they can be. And then, you know, you're going to be checking contractors in and out of that, whether they're, you know, suppliers of paper forms or, you know, critical components.
So part of the risk management calculation is going to become what is the risk from the people with whom we do business, I suppose.
Yeah, though I would, once again, not even call it risk management as much as threat management. So recognize, just as, you know, the president doesn't get a briefing on risk every morning from the DNI, he gets a briefing on threats. They don't, because there's lots of risks to the federal government. But fewer threats, and we've gotten to that point now where, you know, the threats can be quantified in groups of organizations. You know, they're probably under 10,000 organizations or 10,000 small groups that quantify a risk to you or a threat to you, much easier than the millions, if not billions, of applications and documents and everything else that falls under the sway of risk management principles.